Welcome to Risky Business News, a podcast on recent news from the cybersecurity industry. This is Catalin Campano, and today's show is brought to you by Proofpoint. We're going to start today's show with that big story from yesterday related to the whistleblower report filed against Twitter. If you don't know what this is about, Peter Matzetko, Twitter's former head of security, filed a report under the Protection of the Whistleblower Act with the US Congress last month. It's an 84-page report, and summarized, Zatko's claims are as follows. Twitter has no access control system in place, and most engineers can access the site's production environment along with its user data. Twitter doesn't keep logs of what engineers are changing in the production environment or who is accessing what. About half of Twitter's servers run on outdated software that does not support basic security features such as encryption for locally stored data or regular security updates from vendors. Twitter also lacks sufficient redundancies and procedures to restart or recover from data center crashes, which could lead to catastrophic data losses. Twitter management has also tried to hide Zatko's reports from other board members. Twitter staff has been infiltrated by foreign agents suspected of working for the Indian government, and Twitter CEO was aware of this fact. Zatko also said Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal was willing to honor Russia's request to censor Twitter according to the Kremlin's demands. Twitter execs have prioritized user growth over security as they stood to earn bonuses as much as $10 million. As a result, Zatko said that Twitter had no appetite to properly measure and address its spam bot problem. In addition, Twitter leadership went behind Zatko's back to scrub a report on government propaganda and misinformation active on the site that was compiled by a third-party consulting firm at Zatko's request, effectively ensuring that Zatko would never learn of the consulting firm's real findings. Twitter also was never in compliance with a FTC 2010 order and lied to US regulators about its ability to protect user data. Twitter is also failing to properly delete user data when users request this data deleted, mainly because the data is spread across different internal systems and is hard for the company to keep track of it. Zatko also said he was also told to cherry-pick and misrepresent data to create a false perception of progress on urgent cybersecurity issues. And finally, Zatko said he was fired after bringing up these security issues to Twitter's management. I'm not going to touch on Zatko's revelations more than just list them, and the main reason for that is because my colleagues Patrick Gray and Adam Bolo have already looked at the whistleblower report and at Zatko himself with their own critical eye in our main analysis show, the Risky Business Podcast, episode 675, which went live just a few hours before, so go check that one out since they dedicate more than 50 minutes to this topic alone. And now that we're done with the elephant in the room, let's move on to data breach news. One of the most interesting stories that took place this week is the case of Greece's national gas operator, Deskva, which confirmed over the weekend that it was hit by a cyber attack, but said that it would not negotiate with the people behind the incident. Initially, the attack was claimed by the Ragnar Locker ransomware group, but days later, Deskva's data also popped up on the leak site of a second group known as Donut Leaks. On top of this, also in data breach news, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation disclosed a pretty bad security breach this week, as spotted by databreaches.net. According to a breach notification published by the CDCR, the breach exposed medical information on everyone who was tested for COVID-19 by the department from June 2020 through January 2022, including staff, visitors, and others. The leak did not include COVID testing information for the incarcerated population, but the agency said the breach could have exposed some of their mental health information going as far back as 2008. In tech news, a group of privacy experts also filed a class action lawsuit against Oracle in a California court this week, accusing the company of amassing detailed dossiers of more than 5 billion people without their consent. The group says that Oracle has been using the data to power its advertising division, which generates around $42.4 billion in annual revenue. Since there is no privacy legislation in the US, the lawsuit claims that Oracle has violated a series of federal, constitutional, and state laws, and the lawsuit is going to turn into a must-watch for anyone interested in finding out if advertising companies can be touched in any way in the US. Also in tech news, in its activity report for the second quarter of 2022, The Chrome security team said that it saw a 13% increase in the number of Chrome users who opted into its enhanced protection security feature. In addition, the Chrome team also said that its new extension telemetry system has proven useful for the first time and helped the Chrome Web Store team catch and quickly take down a malware campaign. Now, in some hilarious news, or at least hilarious for some, Carbon Black EDRs caused massive blue screen of death errors on Windows system yesterday, crashing corporate networks left and right. The root cause of the incident was later identified as a misbehaving malware detection rule set. The Russo-Ukrainian war, there's also been some activity on the hacktivist front. On Russia's side, several hacktivist groups announced coordinated DDoS attacks against Moldavian targets. The campaign appears to have been triggered after a former Moldavian government official visited Bucha, the site of one of Russia's genocides in Ukraine. Similarly, on the Ukrainian side, Ukraine's IT army also orchestrated its own series of DDoS attacks, and this week the group said they targeted several Russian money transfer services. In addition, a new pro-Ukrainian hacktivist group named 2402 Team leaked what they claimed to be more than 550 gigabytes of information from several Russian financial entities. And since we're on the topic of Russia, researchers from Russian security firm Dr. Web said they also identified counterfeit smartphones of popular brands sold inside Russia that came pre-installed with malware that was configured to abuse the WhatsApp and WhatsApp Business apps. Researchers said the malware used these two apps to download and install additional payloads on the vulnerable devices. At least four smartphone models were found to contain this particular malware, including counterfeits of P48 Pro, Redmi Note, Note 30U, and Mate 40. Moving on to malware news, security firm Resecurity also published a report this week on Escanor, also known as Escarad, a new remote access Trojan advertised on the dark web and on Telegram channels. Resecurity researchers said this new rat is available in both Windows and Android versions. Also in malware news, but this time APT related, Google Tag researchers also published a report on Tuesday on a new tool used by the Iran-based Charming Kitten APT. Named Hyperscrape, Google says Charming Kitten operators use this tool together with previously acquired credentials to automate the process of logging into and then retrieving emails from its victims' Gmail, Yahoo, and Outlook accounts. The clever part about this tool was that it didn't use some deprecated insecure API, but that Hyperscrape mimicked an outdated browser, which forced Gmail to enable its basic HTML interface. Once logged in, Hyperscrape would change the account's language and set it to English, iterate through the content of the victim's mailbox, individually download messages as EML files, and mark them as unread. After the program finished downloading the inbox, it reverted the language back to its original settings and deleted any security emails from Google. Moving on to vulnerability news, Kunlu Lab security researcher Kaushal has also finally published details on Windows Dirty Pipe, a new elevation of privilege vulnerability the researchers used during the Tianfu Cup hacking contest last year. The good news is that Microsoft patched the vulnerability back in February, and Kaushal has now released a POC via his GitHub account. In addition, yesterday we also had two interesting academic papers published by Mordecai Guri, a researcher from the Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, in Israel. Guri is an academic specialized in uncovering covert data exfiltration channels from air-gapped systems. Guri's first attack is named Etherled, and this one uses the activity and status LEDs on modern network cards to send data from compromised air-gapped systems as Morse code to a nearby observer, such as a compromised security camera or an insider with a video recording device. Guri says that depending on the size of the stolen data, the exfiltration can take from 2 seconds for clear text passwords or minutes for larger text files. Guri's second attack is named Gyroscope, and this one uses malware planted on the air gap system to send out ultrasonic sound waves containing encoded stolen data to nearby gyroscopes, such as those typically found in modern smartphones. That's about all in today's main stories. In our next section, We'll hear from Proofpoint, our sponsor this week, and more specifically from Cheryl de Grippot, Proofpoint's Vice President of Threat Research and Detection, who's going to share with us the company's findings on the recent operations of a threat actor the company tracks as TA-558.
Hey, it's Cheryl de Grippot from Proofpoint, VP of Threat Research, and today we're looking at TA-558, sometimes called Resvera, and we've been watching them since 2018. And they target hotel reservations, which is a pretty niche and interesting targeting focus. We've seen a lot published on them over the past couple of years by other organizations like Palo and Cisco. And we put a report out a couple of days ago about what we've seen from them over the past 4 or 5 years. So it's a nice big roundup. Now, this actor, TA-558, they like to send things like Revenge Rat, Async Rat, various things that allow remote access. And we've seen them leverage social engineering around hotel reservations. That's a pretty good lure when you think about it, because it can go across a multitude of different personality types for their victim targeting. So this is what the attack chain basically looks like. First thing, you get an email and it's themed around something being wrong or confirming a hotel reservation. In the body of that email, there is a link to a hotel-themed URL. From there, you click it. That URL leads to a site that looks like a booking site, and it has an ISO file that's downloaded next. That ISO file contains a batch file, which then, of course, PowerShell executes with a helper script to pull down additional next stage payloads. From there, we see AsyncRat installed on the host device, and the threat actor has full remote access from that point forward. This actor likes to use a variety of languages in their email lures as well. We've seen them use primarily Portuguese, but they also use Spanish and English. And in some of the campaigns, they send email lures in multiple languages, meaning they're just trying to hit whoever is a native speaker of those various languages, getting them to click and download further stage payloads. Something else interesting about TA-558 is that we've seen them use 15 different types of malware. Everything from VJWorm, AsyncRat, RevengeRat, Loda, ExtremeRat, CaptureTella, BlueStealer. These guys love a rat. And I think that a lot of focus on things like ransomware and banking trojans and things like that go to show us that, hey, tried and true rats never go out of style. Of course, if you've got a rat in there, you can always send further stage payloads, such as ransomware potentially. But right now we're seeing them primarily focus on getting those initial downloader rats on the machines.
This is it for today's news. You can find links to all the technical reports mentioned in this podcast in our newsletter at riskybiznews.substack.com. And you can subscribe to our podcast via our website at risky.biz.